Welcome to Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football. My name is Wes, and I'd like to invite you to join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news from around the league, make predictions for the upcoming games, and much, much more. And what's up, everyone? It's nice to take in a full weekend of college football, even if it wasn't all marquee matchups. I love just being able to watch college football Thursday, basically all day Saturday, as far as the SEC goes, and even Sunday, right? So, Jesse, how did you take in the first full weekend of college football?
I took in as much college football as I did calories this weekend, and that was an egregious amount.
Same. We did the whole dip and finger foods, yep. And it's amazing how much you eat and don't even realize it.
I ordered over $100 worth of chips and dip variety on DoorDash on Saturday, and they literally brought like 8 bags of chips for all of the things I ordered. It was just me and my boyfriend, and I'm like, they must have assumed that there was a family of 8 inside this house with the amount of like silverware chips they gave us. No.
But if you believe in yourself, you can do it as well.
I was I need to allocate a certain amount of chips and dip per game. We're still trying to work through.
We have tons of leftovers as well. So Matt is traveling today, so standing in for him is a Tennessee fan and a good friend of mine, Johnny Ellison. How's it going, Johnny?
It is solid. I got to confess that my daughter, I just shared this before we started recording. She's just started. This is our final child, our last child. She started 3 weeks ago at Samford University in Birmingham. And my wife and I'd scheduled a trip up Labor Day weekend on Saturday to see her for the first time since she took off for college. So I did a lot of watching on my phone. That's why God created ESPN Plus.
Yes.
But I will say, I'm a pastor, Wes, you know that. I was your pastor for some time, but the college football weekend did make my sermon yesterday. So yeah. I don't know what that counts, but I felt like it was significant.
I think it does. It counts very well. So, you know, I appreciate you standing in for Matt and a Tennessee fan. I don't know what it says about me, but it seems like I have a ton of friends who are Tennessee fans. I don't know what's going on with that.
You need to reevaluate, Wes.
Right?
You're a good guy. You're a good guy.
It's hilarious. But anyway, let's go ahead and talk about some of those games and discuss a little bit about them.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
All right, so let's get started with the epic game that was South Dakota at Mizzou. Mizzou taking this one 35-10. It was weird the way the point differential worked out. Matt and Jesse both ended up getting the point here. So Mizzou dominated the first half, but I think they hope to close out games a little bit better in the future. It seemed like they kind of didn't keep their foot on the gas as they would like. And then Matt put in his notes here. He said, Drinky gets a chance to shine before Mizzou gets dragged back to earth. So do you guys have anything to add on that one?
No.
I think that game's – it's just the first week. Look, So the first full week of football, most teams get to play a far inferior team. So everybody comes away feeling good about the first full week in the football and good that their team won. So, unless you're South Dakota, which,
Right. Well, but at South Dakota, you get money. And that's what I was explaining.
Money. Weekend, true.
Is, you know, there's, I think a lot of times people, especially those that don't follow college football very closely and, you know, they just watch NFL or maybe they don't follow football at all. They're like, well, these schools play these, you know, these cupcake schools, these small schools, like that doesn't matter. Why would they do that? That makes no sense. But I think people forget that these schools get a lot of money to play these premier programs. It helps out their program. It gets them on a national stage that they probably wouldn't get a chance to be on regardless. So it really is important for these smaller schools to get this opportunity to play, you know, another level of competition, which is great for their players, get a lot of money for their program and their university, and then also get that national broadcasting or even just a bigger broadcasting. I think it's awesome. And they jump to play. It's not like anyone's forcing them. Like, this is a big opportunity. And other programs like that may be a mid-tier or closer to a premier program tier, they still want a chance at playing in a playoff. They don't want to hurt their chances. So they may not be as willing to play as, right, you know, South Dakota State University and Technical College.
Yeah. And if you, in the name of competition, if you cut out some of these games, like you said, these schools are missing out on that revenue. That affects not just the football program, but, you know, the school as a whole.
If you talk to these ADs, a lot of them, if you hear them interviewed, it's not just that that money's nice. Some of them count on this money to fund their entire athletic program. And right. it really is a big deal. So,
right.
Absolutely. And there are the very few times, but it happens that they win. The upsets happen. There's always a chance. So you're saying there's a chance that they actually pull this out. And what a cool story that would be. That would be amazing if somebody actually gets to win.
I was just saying the most recent one in my mind that comes to my head is, didn't LSU lose to, was it Troy?
Yeah.
They lost to?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that might have been one of the ones that got Coach O fired. So.
Yeah, they lost to Troy. I mean, yeah. Troy is not a program to laugh at. Like, Troy's pretty decent football program. But, yeah, they lost. So anything can happen on any given Saturday.
You get money and a win.
I did notice that nobody played App State. That was
right.
Exactly.
They don't want them. They don't want them.
Nobody bad news.
We're done. We are done with you, App State. Forget your money. We're not playing you anymore.
That's true.
But not all SEC teams were happy on week one. And
true that.
We're about to get into that. Florida at Utah. Utah winning this one 24-11. Did I have that score right? That 11 just looks weird to me.
Does it look weird?
I think that's a typo.
No, it's 11.
Is it really?
No, it's 11. It is.
Gosh, it's 11.
It
looks weird because it feels wrong.
I watched.
You rarely see 11.
Yeah, right. It's not in the multiples that you think of, but it is
right.
Possible.
Yeah, I watched it and then I just read it and it just looks strange. But anyway, so Matt got the point in this one. This one was just, man, Utah's first play from scrimmage was, I guess, a bad omen. 70-yard touchdown on a dart thrown by Bryson Barnes to Money Parks. Overall, I thought that consistently Florida's defense was out of position. Graham Mertz tried to force things, and the offense wasn't on the same page. And procedure penalties that came up big in this one, too, cost them. It's just a rough opener for Florida. I know we kind of thought that Utah had a chance to pull this off anyway, but that's just not a great look. Matt has Florida looked unprepared for prime time here. I anticipated them to struggle this season, but they looked god awful. Look for Florida to struggle going forward. Johnny, what was your reaction to watching this and just seeing this score?
So if you look at the stats and the score, it's a little confusing because the stats just at a snapshot would appear that Florida won the game.
Right.
The thing that I noticed, one, Florida had, I don't know, 11 or 18 yards rushing. Which means they really did not control the line of scrimmage. Which,
right.
I mean, that's for anybody in any game. And then Mertz had a lot of yardage because mostly he was throwing the ball because they were behind.
Right.
And so I was surprised at the fact that that Utah was able to get out front that quickly and make Florida chase them. But Florida showed in this game, at least at this point, it was game one, but at least at this point, they showed themselves not to be good at catching up.
Right.
When they get behind. So that could be a problem. They've got Tennessee and not this Saturday, but the next Saturday is their first kind of really big and SEC game. So
don't you know, they're licking their chops looking at that secondary. So
they are. Tennessee is going to score points. I don't know whatever else happens, but they'll score points. So we'll see.
Right. Jesse, what do you think?
McCaps, for those that maybe missed it last season, I am attending part-time online the University of Florida's sport law master's program. I will not say I'm a Gator. I am not. I'm attending the university as a student.
Master's is a little bit of a different venture,
very different.
Right?
It
is that. That.
It's
it is
so
that.
Different. But my boyfriend thought it would be so funny the whole game to say, that's your team. That's your soul. Nice. I was like, no, it's nice. Not. It's nice. Not. This was rough. This was honestly rougher than I anticipated. I did not know that they would score 11. At no point would I have guessed 11 in my mathematics. But a couple things stood out in the wrong way. The first being, like you mentioned, Wes, that Florida kind of beat themselves. Coach Napier had really hammered in the point that in the offseason, they were going to work on fundamentals. You know, they were going to really be an all-around better football team. They were going to work on fundamentals. But goodness gracious, apparently it didn't stick because it was botched conversions. You know, you had penalties, procedural penalties that were impacting them in the red zone. You cannot have that. And we saw it last year with Alabama, all of the penalties that they had. You will beat yourself with penalties. We see that all the time. The second thing, special teams, woof. That's an official sports term. Woof. Poor choices on, you know, returning kicks. Their punts were not great. It was like, it was disastrous. Honestly, yeah. Special teams was disastrous. So you have all of these procedural penalties on offense and honestly on defense. You have a woof special teams. And it's like you said, they had to chase Utah, but they can't do that anymore. Because if you remember from last season, the only spark that they had to help them come back from behind was Anthony Richardson. Yep. And he's gone. And they haven't found a replacement for that. And they're going to have to do something quickly. And I know we spoke about it kind of looking forward on the season. Coach Napier has not been there long. And I'm sure he's a lovely individual. I'm sure he's great. And he probably allows them to have casual Fridays. But he has to be concerned at this point, because as we say for every SEC program, they are not patient. Boosters are not patient. And I'm promising you those Florida boosters and those Florida alum are not patient, because this fall from grace is bad.
I do feel bad because I know I'm beating a dead horse because we've talked about this, but I do feel bad for Napier. I think he is a good coach. At least he has that potential. I just don't think he gets a chance. I mean, there's a lot of things where he's been kind of behind the eight ball. Look at the quarterback room, and obviously Anthony Richardson moving on. He's had, you know, a quarterback who had legal troubles and things like that. It's just, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes in addition to the stuff up front that we all see, that it's just been rough for him. And look, I know every coach struggles with, you know, hardships that come up. It just happens. But I just feel like there's just been a lot for him to deal with down there. So
I'll say one other thing about Anthony Richardson. Again, two things with Napier coming from Louisiana. This would not be the first time that a sort of a mid-major coach did really well, came to the SEC, and just to make a Tennessee reference, Butch Jones came from Cincinnati, where he won back-to-back MAC titles. Yeah, thank you, Jesse.
They were having fun with him this past weekend.
I'm just thinking of him. I just had that like image from his press conference this weekend enter my mind.
Oh, no.
It's too funny.
In order to win the game, coach, you have to not lose the game.
Lose the game before you lose the game.
I love that he's true to himself, though. He's not lost the brick by brick, all the sayings.
The champions of life.
He's true to himself. He's not giving that up, and I love it. So,
but it is true that some of these but I will say, Butch Jones was given another year or two because of Josh Dobbs as quarterback. Yeah. I don't know that Anthony Richardson didn't make last year's Napier team, Napier looked better than he actually, I don't know that yet. It would not surprise me if Richardson didn't throw Napier a lifeline last year, the way Josh Dobbs threw Butch Jones a lifeline at Tennessee.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Next is Ball State at Kentucky. Kentucky winning this one 44-14. We were tied in the differential, and I did the math and I get the point. So the only comment I have for this is good for Ray Davis, right? Vanderbilt transfer, over 100 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns. So good on you, Ray. So That's all I had. It looks like Matt didn't have a comment for this one. I'll let you guys chime in if you got anything.
Nope. I told you to watch out for Davis.
Yeah.
He's a good one. He's a good one. And I personally despise Kentucky as a Tennessee fan, but yeah. I like Mike Stoops. He just is like the lunch pail kind of a coach who's just really stayed in there and taken a basketball school and built a solid program. And
right.
So
made it's it a where perfect they, fit for him. He'll stay there. Yeah. Kentucky doesn't have overly high expectations. They want to win. He does that. He wins what he's supposed to win. Sometimes he wins the ones he's not supposed to win. And it seems like culturally it's a great fit. I think Stoops stays there as long as Kentucky will have him.
Yeah.
And he's not the basketball coach. So there's a lot less impatience.
Although, did you see I loved that there was a little bit of infighting last year between him and the basketball coach as to, is this a basketball school or a football school now?
True that.
That was kind of funny.
Calipari, it's been a while since he's won big. So we'll see.
Yeah. Next, Virginia at Tennessee. Tennessee winning this one 49-13. I got the point in this one. The only thing I really had from this one, because it was kind of so lopsided in the end, we saw flashes of brilliance from Milton. I know he has been kind of a question mark, maybe not amongst Tennessee fans. I know they kind of had high hopes, but amongst the rest of the nation, we did also kind of see moments of the old Joe Milton where he kind of overthrow. And maybe throw one, 100 miles an hour, 5 yards from the guy. But that's going to happen. And I'm sure he'll settle down as the year goes along. In terms of Matt's notes, he had what a glorious day for the Vols. However, there were a few moments I was hitting the panic button for that first half, battered Vol syndrome in full effect, to be honest.
True that. So true. It's a real thing.
I know, right? That being said, I was really impressed with the defense. Offense really starting to click in the second half. Big names to keep an eye on going forward. Dylan Sampson, 3 touchdowns. Tyler Barron, 2 sacks. Barron made himself an absolute menace defensively. Running back room is dangerous and deep, not to mention Squirrel White is primed for a huge year. Nico looks good in relief. Excited to see what we can do when we get into SEC play. Sticking with the Tennessee fan theme, Johnny, what are your thoughts on this one?
So Joe Milton, I think, left after the third quarter. I honestly thought this game would be closer than this. I really did. Milton threw well. There was only one throw that I recall that he was sort of like the old Milton, and it was an underthrow, surprisingly, to Ramel Keaton, which would have been a touchdown had he put it out front. It was a completion. But really offensively, Tennessee had almost 300 yards rushing. And that to me was the offensive story. They just crushed Virginia running the ball. And they had 3 different running backs that really, really played well. And then they're going to score points. Milton's going to throw for a ton of yards and all that. But defensively, this is what they've been trying to do, is get a lot of speed off the corners, number one, and a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Number two, that when they rotate in, because with Tennessee's offense, your defense, it is difficult to play defense on a team with an offense like Tennessee's, because you're out there so quickly.
You're so tired.
So they've literally got 3 levels of defensive linemen where it really doesn't drop off much. And there even Tony Elliott after the game said that he saw Tennessee rotating players in, and they really didn't change much from one group to another. And that's a big deal for Tennessee. That's just recruiting for Josh Heupel.
Yeah. Yeah. And the defense had flashes of that last year. I know the Kentucky game where they just absolutely just lit them up on defense and, didn't give up much of anything. So the defense definitely has potential to kick in and has for quite some time. Jesse, what are your thoughts?
Well,
on this one?
Last year, one thought last year against Georgia, Tennessee really, they didn't have the Georgia, and Georgia just took him apart in the second half. So it's the depth. It's a big deal.
Sure. Yeah. Depth is definitely going to be key for them moving forward. And Jesse, what are your thoughts on this one?
I was just honestly with, like Matt said, just a couple times in that first half, I was like, they should be beating them by more, right? Like, we're all watching this.
It's week one, right?
Yeah. And then it was like, you know, they decided to kind of take the brakes off and really play like the Tennessee that I expected to see this season. So other than that, it was exactly what I expected. And, you know, part of me, despite being a Bama fan and outside of being a Bama fan, I did want Virginia to do a little bit more. They've had a rough, you know,
rough present.
And so I kind of was hoping maybe they would get some joy, but they didn't, sadly.
Yeah. The running back that was shot, I think he actually had a carry or two in the game.
Yeah, that was, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. It looks like they're maybe not much of a drop off after all. Offensively, we'll see. Moving forward, we have Mercer at Ole Miss. Ole Miss winning this one 73-7. That's not a typo. Matt won the point on this one. I have nothing to say. Matt says, poor Mercer. Good payday for them, though, as to your point earlier.
That's it.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say. We have to talk
about the fact that the real story of this game is Juice Kiffin, the yellow lab.
That's he can do it all.
Kiffin. He was kicking tee off. He was adorable.
Yeah.
So at least, even though Mercer got the snot kicked out of him, they did get to see a really cute dog. So
that's worth it right there.
That's something.
Yeah.
No doubt. Mercer has a, if you've ever been to their athletic complex, to me, it's just really pretty the way it's set. Mm-hmm. So this is just a little bit more financial investment to be able to put in that and make it look even better.
That's right. I love it. Next is UMass at Auburn. Auburn winning this one 59-14. Matt getting the point here. Hugh Freeze's first game passes all the tests. It's an easy opponent, but they didn't struggle. And all the quarterbacks got a chance to play, which is important for depth. And obviously also, especially nowadays, keeping guys out of the transfer portal, getting some playing time in there. And also another thing that I saw, they listed, obviously, Ashford's stats. They listed, who was the starter last year? For some of the games he's transferred out west. I can't think of his name now.
About Bo Nix, right?
No, not Bo. Bo Nix was before that, but he was
in Oregon last year.
Yeah,
right. Bo Nix, and then what was the? There was the other one. Gosh, it's aggravating to me now that I can't think of it. Anyway, those three guys that Harsin had.
Ashford.
No, listed him first. Ashford, okay. Nix, and then the other guy. Anyway, all of them had wonderful games over the weekend. And so they're like, Harsin couldn't do anything with that. So, anyway,
we're 30 minutes from Auburn, and Wes, you know, this, we have sort of a connection with the Nix family, right? Because Bo Nix's grandparents were members of our church in Warner Robins.
Right.
Bo Nix's father is now the high school coach right here in the community next to us in Phoenix City. Mm. And I really think Bo Nix sort of got robbed a couple of seasons simply because of terrible offensive coaching. And I'm not, you know, it is what it is, but
right.
I think you're seeing him now do what he was always able to do.
Yeah, for sure. Desi, do you have any thoughts?
I mean, mine on Auburn, I think in the first half, they were struggling to pass and to stop the run a little bit, which were problems we saw last season, but they made those adjustments at halftime, and going into the second half really showed some improvement. So overall, a success, some positive signs for them. And I don't know if you've ever seen, I think it's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but the meme of like the guy at the whiteboard with all of the threads and, you know, notes on the whiteboard trying to connect all the things. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to explain to my boyfriend, who did not go to an SEC school, the Hugh Freeze Auburn saga. And I started back in like 2013, and I was going, and I was like, hold on, but then enter this guy and this guy and this guy, and then blah 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 blah, and then he went to Liberty, and then he found Jesus. I don't know, but then now he's here. and it was like, he was like, I'm sorry, who are you talking about at this point? And it was it's very hard to explain this to someone who doesn't follow the SEC. It's basically what I'm trying to say. This whole progression of Hugh Freeze and just Auburn University is a complicated story.
Yeah, it really is. And
almost as complicated as Tennessee's era of coaching carousel. But I will say,
I tried to do that too, and I gave up.
No, don't try.
I gave up.
Don't try. Well, Hugh Freeze is going to win. With all of his personal troubles, assuming that nothing comes along from the outside the lines.
No cell phones.
Trips him up. Yeah, right. He is going to win.
Yeah.
He literally has won everywhere he's coached. And the people in Auburn, I'm 30 minutes from there. They are just beside themselves with excitement with him.
Right.
We will see if it's as good as they, you know, all that it's going to be. But I just, he's going to win. So,
you know, he has to in Auburn, or they will literally get rid of
true, him. True.
True.
You could be like Malzahn and even beat Bama and you're still out. So,
or Chizik and win a national championship and get fired 2 years later.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did it before it was cool, before Coach O did the same thing.
That's right.
By the way, TJ Finley is who I was trying to think of. I don't know why.
You're right.
I don't know why I couldn't think of him.
I completely forgot about him. Also, speaking of Bo Nix, for those that didn't pay attention to the Oregon game, because if you're an SEC fan, like, why would you? But they scored over 80 points in that game, and that's not me misspeaking. And their poor mascot does push-ups for every single touchdown. That poor duck did over 750 push-ups, y'all. Someone check on them. I hope they just switched them out, because good Lord.
Hopefully he had an inkling before the game got started and ate his Wheaties that morning. I hope.
Yeah,
something.
Right. Yeah. I hope he ate it with creatine. Good night.
I didn't know ducks had that level of chest workout.
It's amazing.
I mean, at this point, the duck's going to be drafted onto the team because that's endurance. Right.
I would pay to see that. So. All right. Next, we had Western Carolina at Arkansas. Arkansas winning this one 56-13. I got the point in this one. I didn't really have anything to say in this one. This was, as Matt put it, this was a nuke. It was expected.
KJ Jefferson. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. KJ Jefferson is the man. Johnny, do you have anything
to add? He has been. It's interesting. I sort of, there are five turnovers, Western Carolina, because I see 56. I'm expecting 500 yards of offense, which they didn't, but. Western Carolina really did not make it very difficult. They had five turnovers. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, at Arkansas defense, man. So, all right, let's move to Southeast Louisiana at Mississippi State. Mississippi State winning this one 48-7. I got the point in this one. Look, I'm not going to lie. It made me a little bit sad to see a different style of offense at Mississippi State. But to Zach Arnett's credit, they did come out and they took care of business. They did what they needed to do. So a good start for Mississippi State, and we'll see what the rest of the year holds. Matt says the post-Mike Leach era is off to a good start. Hope they continue to look good. Jesse, let's start with you. Did you have any thoughts on this one?
No, it just made me sad not to like have a Mike Leach like halftime little –
you need a sound clip, right?
Yeah, post-game. I don't know. Maybe sad not to have those, like, quips to talk about. But I think the best tribute that they could do for him is to start out with a win. So it was good to see
that. Johnny, if you're like us, you have, a favorite kind of Mike Leach-ism. Do you have any that come to mind, or maybe just, like, one that just makes you laugh every time you think of it?
Well, so for me, it was, first of all, I have his books, especially the one on being a pirate.
Yes.
I have that. I do actually have that book. The second, that when I think of Mike Leach, he was one of the carousel of coaches that John Curry interviewed that year after.
Yes, that's right.
Right before Jeremy Pruitt came to hold this. So he interviewed Mike Leach, who was going to come to Tennessee.
I was going
to
say, it looked like it was a done deal over there for a little bit.
We were crushed. I was crushed just to think of Mike Leach in the land of hillbillies and Rocky Top. That would have been beautiful. I don't know what the success.
You guys have boats too. He would have been so happy.
Right? The Vol Navy pulling up on it. So, yeah, that's what I think of, the interviewing him and almost getting him to come to Tennessee.
Makes sense as a Tennessee fan for sure. Well, we do wish Mississippi State the best of luck going forward this year. Let's move on to the next game, UT Martin at Georgia. Georgia winning this one 48-7. Matt got the point here. Look, I don't have a lot to say just from the standpoint of this was expected. We did get off to kind of a little bit of a slow start, finished strong against an opponent that obviously we should have taken care of. I was a little bit frustrated at the offensive line, who is supposed to be the best in the nation, really struggled to move their defensive front around. And that was a little concerning. You know, I could, you know, whatever cause you could chalk that up to, I don't know, but it was a little concerning to me. All three quarterbacks did look really good, though. So that was an area of encouragement. They all looked good when they were in. I assume the starting job will remain with Beck until he just has a performance that, you know, convinces the coaches otherwise. So Matt said slow start made me hopeful, but then Georgia, I'm going to Georgia. Guess we'll see how it goes. Bowers showing why he's the number one target in Athens. Did you guys have anything to add on? I know that was another blowout.
Retweet to Matt.
Retweet.
I will say that first half may be a perfect microcosm of why it's so difficult to repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Just for, because these teams, what is that, 18 in a row for Georgia?
Something like that, yeah. Just I saw the mentality. Flash that up there.
And it doesn't matter what the coach says. It doesn't matter how he says they think we're going to lose. And it's players in the mindset of being hungry. It's like the Rocky Eye of the Tiger kind of thing. To get them there, it is so difficult to do that. Nick, no one's done it like Nick Saban. There's a secret to that. And so I hope, you know, Kirby Smart may have it, but we'll see. But that, this is hard to repeat.
Yeah. Well, in a moment of transparency as a Georgia fan, I was surprised that he was able to do that last year. I thought that was going to be incredibly difficult to get them motivated. I'm not going to say it's impossible to do 3 years in a row, but the apathy has to be stronger than ever. And whether you are conscious about that or not, it's just a reality. So,
well, and unfortunately, if Georgia doesn't, I fear that Bobo is going to be the scapegoat.
Oh, true. That's a good point. Possibly. Yeah. Look at the drop off, you know, new OC.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. All right. Next is New Mexico at Texas A&M. A&M winning this one 52-10. I got the point here. And the only note that I put is the sparks flying between Jimbo and Bobby Petrino. That's going to have to wait till another time. Matt said, I'm not sure what he's saying. Wasn't Texas A&M to do this out the gate. I'm not really sure what he's saying there. Maybe you guys can translate that.
I don't know.
Did you have any thoughts? Yep. Any thoughts on this one?
I mean, my only thing is, like, they should win this one. If they didn't win this one, then I think Jimbo Fisher gets fired, like, as soon as the game's over. Yeah. I don't think that there's any patience, or he fires Petrino immediately after the game. This is expected. I will reserve my judgments until they play in the SEC.
Right. That's fair.
In an effort of full disclosure, I have never thought Jimbo Fisher was a great coach. I think he won a national championship at Florida State the same way Gene Chizik won one at Auburn. I just think Jameis Winston, Cam Newton at Auburn. So I've never thought Jimbo Fisher was that great of a coach. That said, going into this, New Mexico State, I think their average season over the last 3 or 4 years is like 3-10.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not a good program. So,
yeah, they're one of those that gets the paycheck. I mean, that's
they're an FBS team the same way Vanderbilt is. God bless Vanderbilt.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of which,
I was gonna say, speaking of Vanderbilt,
that was a segue for you, host.
I appreciate that. It's like we planned that. Alabama A&M at Vanderbilt. Vandy won this one 47-13. I got the point here. And all I got to say, y'all out here disrespecting Vandy. I don't get it.
Right.
So. and then Matt put in the notes, Vandy deserves the disrespect, Wes.
Listen, all I got to say is Vanderbilt's 2-0.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't matter how they get there. They are 2-0.
they have the best record of any SEC team right now.
They do.
Exactly. They're first in their division.
That's it. Oh, man. All right. Next, Middle Tennessee at Alabama. Bama winning this one 56-7. Matt got the point here. Yeah, it's hard to tell where these teams stand in week one. I am looking forward to later on in the schedule to figure out how they stack up. Obviously, Jesse, I know you're glad to see a resounding win here. Matt says Bama doing Bama things. Do y'all have anything to add? I'm sure you have something to say, Jesse.
I do, obviously.
Jesse.
I think for Bama fans, what was really encouraging is, you know, we've all been waiting for this quarterback battle because we have like five. And it was really until Friday, nobody knew. I mean, we assumed it would be Milroe that would start because he was the only one that had a start before then when Bryce was hurt last season. But we weren't sure. I mean, we had a transfer from Notre Dame. We have Notre Dame's OC. So knowing that Jalen Milroe started and honestly just seeing the difference in his composure from last season to this season is so encouraging. Everyone, I can say from a Bama standpoint, was concerned. We wanted to make sure that he could be composed. We got so used to that in Bryce Young, who it didn't matter what happened, face just nothing. Whereas Milroe, he is a very different quarterback than Bryce Young was, very mobile. He reminds me, his gameplay, a lot of Jalen Hurts, and that he is a very mobile, he'll run, and he can scramble really well. But when it came to passing, because if he got shut down on the run, his passing, it was not accurate necessarily. He threw a lot of interceptions last year. So to see his composure, and even, I mean, on like the second snap, it's a weird snap. It goes behind him. He picks it up and runs it in for a TD. Just that composure. And the fact that he didn't immediately take to scrambling, he would sit back in the pocket and he would assess. I think his football IQ, his ability to make reads has really, really improved. So that was encouraging. I loved being able to see multiple quarterbacks. I mean, we took him out like at half, and we got to see Buckner. We got to see Simpson. So that was great to see because again, it's Milroe's job to lose. There are people sitting behind him that are eager to get in there and they all got to score, which is really cool as well. Milroe made history with his ability to, have, what was it? It was a couple running touchdowns and a couple passing touchdowns. So loved that. Also, I think if you listened to the show last year, praise the Lord above that Bill O'Brien is away. Unfortunately for me as a Pats fan, he has returned to New England. I'm devastated. I digress. But Tommy Rees was coaching and did a great job in his first game. I will reserve all praise for him. But as a coordinator, it was such a vast improvement to what we saw with Bill O'Brien. Also, who knew we had a defense? When you're not coached by Golding, it's actually okay. So excited not to have either of those gentlemen anywhere near Tuscaloosa, and will riot if they try to come back. But we started to see the dominating defense that I think we were accustomed to in Tuscaloosa that we kind of started to lose a little bit last year. Our defensive performance was great. It was awesome to see. So I'm excited. I'm also hella nervous for next week, but I'm more encouraged after watching this performance than I was before it. So roll time.
So if last year, if your coordinators were to be compared to an article of food, it was a stale ham sandwich. And I think at one point it was like the nasty nachos that you find on the floor of a dorm. Yeah. Or something like that, nice. Something to that effect. So this year, what food item is it after game one?
Oh, after game one, I'm going to give our coordinators, I'm going to give them some like their buffalo chicken dip, fresh hot out the oven.
Okay.
Everyone's excited.
Good stuff.
We're hopeful. Now it's really up to them in this second game to see if they like make me want to throw up or not. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that everything settles well.
We hope it doesn't become the buffalo chicken dip that's been sitting there for 3 hours during the ball game. It's crusty around the edges, right?
Yeah, that was not in the crock pot warming. It was just on the counter. Yeah. And was made with slightly expired cream cheese. So we're hopeful.
Johnny, as a Tennessee fan, I know you have some thoughts on Bama.
Yeah. Nightmares most years, right? It was the first possession with that weird snap.
Yep.
That Miller, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that two things that I saw on that one was he didn't panic. He picked it up, but just his athleticism certainly is above Bryce Young. Now, the one question, and that you brought this up, Bryce Young may have been the most accurate quarterback, or one of the two or three. Honestly, Hendon Hooker and he in the SEC were neck and neck in completion percentage. He is so incredibly accurate, which is so important. So at Milroe, I guess it remains to be seen if he's going to – he doesn't have to be Bryce Young accurate, but obviously he's got to be pretty accurate. So we'll see that. But his athleticism was just off the chain, I think.
Right. Yeah, well, and that was the thing that I appreciated about the way that Tommy Reese was calling the offense as well, is we saw with Bill O'Brien so much last season when Bryce was out, he was still calling an offense for Bryce Young with Jalen Milroe in it. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the issue, is they're very different. They have very different styles and accuracies. So calling the same plays for Jalen as he would for Bryce did not set him up for success at all, and probably fueled his panic. But we saw Tommy Reese, he's not trying to throw like super long balls. I mean, he threw a few, but it wasn't the overall call. You saw shorter passes, you know, and I think not only does that set him up for success, that's more in his wheelhouse and just smarter overall for our offense, but you allow him to be successful, which builds confidence, which builds composure. It's just better all around coaching. From an offensive coordinator. So to see the change in the plays called and knowing that they are for that individual, instead of just trying to make an individual fit into a system that is not made for them, I was very happy about.
Yeah, Milroe had three passing touchdowns and two rushing.
Yes.
And setting us up for a later segment, there's been someone else did that in a game opener. His name was Cam Newton. And he won the Heisman that year. So not saying anything, but we'll get there. All right. Next, let's talk about North Carolina versus South Carolina. Was the disappointment coming through in my voice when I said that? Sorry. UNC winning this one 31-17. Nobody got the point in this one. We all picked South Carolina. I think maybe that was just wishful thinking. I don't know. But look, Spencer Rattler was sacked 9 times in this game. South Carolina rushed 31 times for -2 yards. That offensive line has got to do something. I mean, that's just not going to work, especially in the SEC. Matt says, and I'm going to butcher this. Let me know if I said it wrong. Schadenfreude. I know I've heard the term. Not sure if I pronounced it correctly. Anyway, he says it's that at its finest. Rattler has a great game stat-wise, but yikes at that final score against a middling ACC team. Beamer fever already over? Dude came off like a whiny baby during the postgame. Matt letting his disgust of Beamer. Let me, as a Tennessee fan, so Matt is not impressed with Shane Beamer. I know some of that may stem from, you know, last year's game against South Carolina for Tennessee. What are your thoughts on Shane Beamer, Johnny?
So literally South Carolina foiled Tennessee's shot at the playoff last year. So that was just there was a lot going on there. But Beamer is one of those guys that sort of the way he is loved if you're winning to a high level.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely despised if you're losing. Like, there's no real in between with him.
True.
And that's his personality. But until he recruits Southeastern Conference Division I linemen, four and five star linemen, he's going to have a hard time being consistent, because they just got shoved around by an ACC team, and that ought not happen.
Yeah,
that shouldn't.
the play's blown up before it even has a chance. Jesse, I know you're a little disappointed. I know you enjoy Beamer Ball a little bit.
I was really hoping. This was a little bit of a mess, y'all. It was about as appetizing as watching the Duke's Mayo eating contest that Matt so kindly texted us.
So bad. Want
to curb your appetite, I suggest watching that on repeat. But no, it was, their rushing attack was concerning. They could not get anything going all night against Carolina in football. Not basketball, football. Right. It was rough. I mean, it was super rough. Spencer Rattler tried, but you can't do much on offense when your offensive line can't do anything. And we're seeing offensive linemen that are huge. I mean, they talked about it in the Bama game. Our offensive front outweighs and is larger height and weight than the largest offensive line front in the NFL, which was on the Patriots last year by like a lot. You're seeing that across programs. The student athletes nowadays are insane specimens, and they're going to get pushed around. And your quarterback, I mean, he took a beating. Good Lord. And I'm not a Spencer Rattler fan necessarily, but he took a beating. But they also, everyone on the Gamecocks took a beating. There were multiple injuries that are going to plague them for several games. It's going to be an issue because we don't really know yet how serious some of them are. But if some of these guys are out, then there's holes that they're going to have to plug that I don't know they have the depth to do so. I thought that Beamer tried to be creative coming into the second half with a surprising onside kick. It caught Carolina off guard, or UNC off guard, but they weren't able to do anything with it. So, I mean, yes, they were playing the ACC, ACC Player of the Year, their quarterback. Great. That's fantastic. But still, I think Carolina, we had higher hopes seeing what they did to a very powerful Tennessee team last year.
And Clemson.
And you've got to be consistent. I think you hit it right on the head. It's got to be consistent. You can't just win random games and keep your job. I like Shane Beamer. I like what he's done there as far as culture. I think he's fun. I think the players like him, but I think he's getting beaten recruiting wise. And I don't know what you do. I don't know. I mean, you can't just pack on pounds on these players and, you know, week to week. So I don't know what the antidote to this performance was, but they're going to have to come up with it quick in Columbia.
Yeah. Poor Spencer. I hope he got a ice bath after this one, because he needed
Lord.
So there are two things that I saw that it came to my mind as Jesse was talking. Spencer, well, first of all, Shane Beamer, if he wins, I kind of like him too. I think there's excitement. He's a man of faith. But if he doesn't win, he becomes a Butch Jones on steroids. Mm-hmm. He really does. If he does not win, and people will despise that. So, but the very last drive South Carolina had, it's 4th and 19. And Rattler throws a ball eight, nine yards down the field. And people are hacking on Rattler. But listen, Rattler threw that when he did because he felt like he didn't have time to wait for a deeper route. I'm telling you,
he
cut it loose because he didn't have time the whole game. And he probably would have gotten sacked had he waited any longer. And so I don't know that was on him necessarily.
Yeah.
But he was reacting to what he had experienced the whole game.
It wouldn't have made a difference anyways. You know, like at that point, I agree with if that was his decision, in fact, which I would agree it was. I don't blame him for not wanting to, you know, have his face in the grass again. Yeah. That's a potential injury that he would have to deal with that isn't going to make a difference if they score or not. It doesn't matter.
Johnny, to your point earlier about Florida, they are not a team that's built to come from behind. And so they're going to be struggling if that's the case. So,
yeah. And their defense, just God bless them. Their offense couldn't stay on the field. Defense had to be so gassed. So tired.
That's why the North Carolina pulled away in the second half.
Yep. They were, the you could see it in their movements, how tired they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the final game of the week. Now it's LSU versus Florida State. Florida State winning this one handily, 45-24, and it actually should have been a little bit worse than that, I think. Jesse was the only one to pick FSU, so mm-hmm. getting nice. Yeah, I mean, so it was a close game at half, right? The LSU leading 17-14. It was just weird to see the second half just get away from them. LSU looked tired, out of position defensively in the second half. Florida State able to capitalize on this and really just pull the ahead, thanks in large part to some phenomenal play by Florida State's quarterback, Jordan Travis, yeah. who saw him last year, and he looked really good then, too. On the other side, or you know, Florida's defense swarming. Jaden Daniels found himself running for his life a lot. At least I saw that a lot in the second half. FSU just dominated both sides of the ball in the second half, no question, outscoring LSU 31-7 in that second half. So it's just kind of unreal to watch that unfold. And then Matt says, oh no, LSU, what happened? We haven't seen LSU get demolished like this since the SEC championship against UGA or when Tennessee boat raced them at home last season. Paper Tigers in full effect. Don't believe the hype. Jesse, what are your thoughts on LSU? Be careful. Those LSU fans,
I know,
are
they get very mad at me. I guarantee they were mad at me when I picked FSU, but I'm not sorry about it. It was an exciting game to watch in the first half. It really was. It was boom, 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 boom. And I was like, oh, this is about to be a thing.
It was.
It was in the first half. It was not in the second half. It got away from them quite quickly, but I mean, Travis, I think, outshowed Jay Daniels. Honestly, he really did. He was really great to watch. Their wideouts were great to watch. I mean, I think they made history with some of their stats there, but I just don't know that LSU was ready for this stage. Again, I know they beat us last year. I still haunts me. Don't worry. Still thinking about it. But I just don't know that they were ready for this much of a prime time. You're the only game on Sunday. They entered the night as, you know, as a 2.5-point favorite with playoff expectations. All of the announcers were talking about it. And then it was really disappointing. They were competitive early, like we said. But in the second half, they just were not able to keep it up. And if you're going to be a playoff team, you have to play all four. You can't just come out and hope that the first half is going to carry you through, because it's not. FSU is absolutely a quality opponent. I think you're seeing something down there in Tallahassee that we haven't seen down there in a really long time, honestly, probably since Jimbo Fisher was there. But LSU, they had every opportunity to come back in this game. They had costly turnovers early in the fourth quarter, and then they had penalties, red zone mistakes, penalties. And again, you're going to beat yourself. With an FSU team like this, you can't give them anything, but they had some costly, costly errors on the Tigers side. You know, and then they were just 3-for-13 on late downs. If there's one thing that I know that wins, or at least sure as hell helps you win, it's third down conversions. And if you can't convert on third down, you're done. I mean, you're done. So
yeah.
I think they struggled with the run game. Josh Williams, Noah Kane, Trey Bradford combined for less than 50 rushing yards.
Yeah.
Not great. It's something that they're really going to have to make some concerted efforts, because once they get into conference play, it's not going to get any easier. But I think this FSU team might be for real too.
Yeah, so LSU lost by 1 point last year to Florida State. Mm-hmm. The margin was quite a bit more this year. However, they still have the same opportunity as they had last year. It's an out-of-conference loss. They could still get things going. And so from that standpoint, Johnny, what does LSU have to do to right the ship and begin their trek to the SEC championship again?
So not to turn the knife, Jesse, but LSU beat Alabama last year. So obviously they have the capability, the players, to beat some elite teams.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, Brian Kelly has not shown the ability to have his team be consistent. And so last year, lost to FSU by a point, and Tennessee beat LSU relatively.
Real bad.
Then for like, who would have thought then that LSU would turn around and beat Bama? It just so it's
we helped them beat us. I'm just gonna say it. We helped them beat us,
and that's I'm sure that's true.
It is,
except just that.
But they won't.
You're gonna have to have you're gonna have to have some consistency, and I don't know. Listen, Brian Kelly God bless him at Notre Dame, he did not have the kinds of week in and week out demanding teams you have in the SEC. No, if you're not, listen, people can call us SEC snobs. I'll take that. I don't care. I think I am. SEC is just far and away the best football conference, and every other conference has elite teams at the top, but you're not playing week in and week out these teams like this. And so to answer your question, they're going to have to find a way to consistently be able to play at a top level every week. So that
can be SEC snobs. Again, 15 out of the last 22 national championships sit with an SEC team.
If the numbers support it.
I'm saying that.
True that. You could even go back into the 90s for that matter, because in the late 90s you had Florida and Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You move into the 2000s, then you have LSU, you have Alabama, so Auburn.
You have Florida, you have Georgia. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We're spreading it around. It did stay
in a lot of SEC teams. It is a lot of it. Well, nobody's done what Nick Saban has, but still, you have a lot of SEC teams that have won titles.
You had 5 years, and I was talking about it this weekend, you had 5 years almost where the national championship sat in the state of Alabama, because you had 2009 with Bama, 2010 with Auburn, 2011 and 2012 with Alabama. Auburn went in 2013 and played FSU and lost.
Right.
But that would have been 5 years in one state, which is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That is crazy.
One other thing on this game. I will say that, remember on the Sports Down podcast that we guested on, I did say that Florida State was my dark horse. So
you're right.
We got to watch out for them. They're looking good.
So. No, they're a good team. Yeah. I don't know that they're an elite team yet. We'll see. But they're a high quality team.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's head into a speed round for some fun questions.
Speed round.
All right. So we'll head into some of these quick questions here. Just off the cuff, what is your answer? I'll read Matt's answers last. But just true or false? Question one: Jalen Milroe is a legitimate Heisman contender. Jesse, let's start with you.
I don't know. The Heisman's stupid, but also it's. I don't know. I don't know yet. Maybe. My answer
numbers,
is maybe.
The numbers
non-committal, maybe.
What do you think?
The Heisman has been dead to me since 98 when Woodson won it over Peyton Manning.
You sound exactly like Matt, and I love it.
we Tennessee fans are consistent, but if Milroe is a Heisman Trophy candidate, then so is Joe Milton.
Yeah. No, that's fair. The only reason I even put this on here is because they were talking about it. They were comparing the numbers with Cam
immediately.
Newton. Yeah. Immediately. So I was like, even my 12-year-old son was like, that was kind of fast, wasn't it? I was like, yeah, it was.
It was, bud.
Matt says, neither. It's too early to tell, but Saban knows how to make them. So
fair.
Question number two. Pack it up. Beamer ball has gone bad like a jar of spoiled mayonnaise. Johnny, what do you think? Is the party over? Are we done?
I fear as much, except that the last two games of last year, they popped up and had two big wins over Tennessee and Clemson. So maybe you've still got a few days left on the expiration date, or maybe you're just getting to the expired by,
right?
But you got a few more days before it actually spoils.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. Jesse, what do you think?
The fact that you put a spoiled jar of mayonnaise is actually sickening just to think about, but I don't know that it's spoiled. I don't think it's a good start, but I think at least from a player's perspective, it seems like Shane Beamer can really guide their attitudes and keep them at a really high, morality level. But I would also say from a South Carolina perspective, it's not like they have the highest of hopes right now. I don't think he's in a hot seat. So I think it's fine. But I am concerned, and I probably should have mentioned this when we talked about them. What happens when Spencer Rattler leaves? I mean, he's got to leave after this year. So, like, what happens? Because he wasn't recruiting, you know, a star quarterback to sit behind him. So, I don't know. I think this season he's safe, but I think next season's the time to see if there's a spoiled Beamer jar.
I think that's true. I agree with that.
My main concern is how they lost and how bad the offensive line looks. I'm not saying that the party's over for him per se, but the year is not looking to stack up well. Once you talk about all the defenses that they're going to go up against in the SEC, I'm not saying that UNC doesn't have quality team or quality defense, but just look for more of the same, right? So it's not going to get much easier for them through a lot of these games. Matt says, yes, absolutely. Yes, it's over. So,
but I would say it's South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like what, I don't know what would have to happen for Beamer to lose a job after this year. It would have to be atrocious because he's not at Alabama or Auburn or LSU or even Tennessee. It's just different.
It really is. I mean, they kept Muschamp longer than I thought they would. You know,
Muschamp.
Right? I don't know.
I love him as a DC at Georgia.
But listen, if you ask me how good of a head coach was Will Muschamp, I would say he's a great defensive coordinator.
He really is. Right. He really is. Yeah. But that's the thing is, I don't know what the tipping point is for South Carolina because I really don't know. It's a really high tipping point that I don't think we're anywhere near.
And I guess my motivation in that question is not necessarily like, is he going to get fired as much as we saw an upward trend. I was like, is that upward trend over? So
I don't know. They get plateaued. They're going to be consistently inconsistent.
I do appreciate the enthusiasm that he has and the fun that the players seem to be having as well, even in some of the like off the field stuff. And I do like that. And so from that standpoint, you know, I don't know. We'll see. And then our final speed round question, is FSU that good or is LSU that bad? Johnny, let's start with you.
I would say FSU is that good. I know LSU made a few mistakes, but not that many to represent that score. I would say FSU is that good.
Okay. Jesse, do you agree?
I think the answer to the are they good and bad is yes. I think FSU really is a good football program right now. And I think LSU has very talented players. But I think they need to work on some fundamentals in this season. And I also think that as a team, I just don't know that they were, like I said before, ready for that stage. I don't think that they're bad. I'm not going to say they're bad. They're a good ball team. They have great talent. I just don't know that this is the year that they're like playoff contenders. Right. I think FSU might be, but does that mean LSU is bad? No, it just means that I don't know that they're to the level of FSU. And I think they went into this game and the media certainly didn't help with a lot of hype.
Yeah, no, that's
Brian Kelly made a classic quote. I don't know if you saw it. He said, we went into the game thinking we were the Georgia Bulldogs. Oof.
I did see him say, something about we are not the team that we thought we were.
Yeah.
A little bit of a variant of the Dennis Green
quote. Dennis Green. We are not who we thought we were.
Right, exactly. I think it is a little bit of both. I can see this being the kind of the kick in the teeth that LSU needed, though. To kind of light a fire for the rest of the year. So, you know, we'll see. But I do agree with you, Johnny. If I had to pick, I would say that FSU is that good. Matt says FSU has improved since these two teams met last year. LSU hasn't. LSU isn't a bad team, just not elite. So, all right. Well, let's do a quick listener feedback segment.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right. So our first comment is from Mitch P. He says Alabama and Georgia are still on top. Ole Miss looks to have potential. And I hope Auburn is back. So a lot of things that we've kind of discussed already. But did you guys have any thoughts on any of that?
I hope they're not back, Mitch.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah,
no, that's Mitch true. Peace, Mitch Peace, an all around SEC fandom.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. And he does have a point about Ole Miss. I mean, the yeah. potential is there. And then kind of segueing from that into the next user. You can tell I work with computers because I consistently call them users instead of listeners, and it's annoying.
True that. True that.
Anyway, listener Tyler T says Jaxson Dart and Trey Harris and Quinshon Judkins might be a problem for defenses. And I think we couldn't agree more.
I will be that.
Because they have been looking good. So
I mean, they have Lane Kiffin is an offensive mastermind. I think he is incredible with offenses. And you can see that. I mean, look at their score. He's creative on offense. He is not timid. He calls plays and goes for it on fourth. And you're like, what are you doing? But it works out. And I think that excites his players. I think the fact that he lets them go for it a lot on fourth gives them a little bit of confidence and makes them have some moxie. So absolutely. And Quinshon Judkins is just a natural talent. It's amazing to watch him play. And I think it's absolutely going to be a problem for a lot of defenses, and really hoping not for Bama.
little difficult though. It was Mercer. There's not a good SEC team that doesn't have elite receivers and backs that are trouble for defenses. Alabama, fair. Tennessee, Auburn. And so not to splash water, I'm sure there'll be trouble for defenses, but this was Mercer, and so we'll see. Yeah.
Well, Georgia will have an opportunity to find out as well on November the 11th. So, yeah, that's not a team we play every year, so interested to see
that. That'll be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that does it for our listener feedback. Let's talk about some of these upcoming games.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Okay, so our first one that we're looking at this upcoming weekend is Ball State at 0-1 at Georgia, 1-0 noon on SEC Network. Yeah, just getting right into it. Matt says, poor Ball State, rough start to that season. He's picking Georgia 56-3. Yeah, I don't have much to say about this one either. I'm going to go with Georgia. I'd say that they are a little bit angry that they didn't get the goose egg last week. I'm going to go Georgia 49-0. Jesse, what do you got?
Said it last week. I'm bored already. UGA 42-3.
Johnny, 48-3,
Georgia. 48-3, okay. Georgia.
All righty. Next is Vanderbilt, 2-0, like we said, at Wake Forest, 1-0. This one might be a little bit more of a reality check, though. That is actually 11 a.m. on the ACC Network, and I'm not really sure why, but that's an interesting
good game.
Yeah. So Matt has Wake winning this one 24-20. I think Vandy's a little bit closer than people think, but I think they just come up short. I got Wake 28-27. Jesse?
I agree. I think they're closer. I am going to pick Wake Forest, though, 21-17.
Okay. Johnny?
I think I'm going to go with Vandy on this 28-24.
Breaking from the pack. I love it. All right. Next is Eastern Kentucky, 0-1 at Kentucky, 1-0, 3 o'clock on ESPN+. Matt has Kentucky 33-10. I'm going to go Kentucky as well, 52-10. Jesse?
I am also going to go with the Wildcats. I'm going to pick them 35-6.
Okay. Johnny?
Kentucky, 38-7.
All right. Next, Ole Miss, 1-0 at Tulane, 1-0. Look at this. You know, Tulane is what, number 22 in AP right
now? Yeah.
So they're right. They're right there. Too. So that's an interesting matchup. 3:30 on ESPN2. Matt has Ole Miss winning this one 35-30. And, like, what a surprisingly exciting matchup, right? Like, Tulane looked great against South Alabama last week. But I think Ole Miss is going to be a little bit more of a test, obviously. So right now, Ole Miss is only favored by 7. But I'm going to go ahead and say Ole Miss wins this thing 38-28. Jesse?
I agree. I think Ole Miss is able to take care of this. It's going to be harder than Mercer was, but I'm pretty confident in their ability. So I'm picking Ole Miss 38-17.
Johnny?
I don't think Ole Miss scores any less than in the 40s. So I'll go 42-28 Ole Miss.
Okay. Like that pick. Next is Texas A&M 1-0 at Miami 1-0. This is at 3:30 on ABC. Here's another interesting one. Matt has A&M winning this one 30-27. Again, like Miami looked great against Miami of Ohio, the other Miami, right?
Yeah.
Big Ben's not there anymore, so you know we don't really follow them, I guess. But they get a little bit more of a test here. A&M is actually only favored by 4 points here, so don't sleep on this one either. I'm excited to watch this one. I think A&M's got their first stumble of the year, and I'm going to say they lose it in a close one. Miami wins 27-24. Jesse?
I agree. I think this is one where we're actually going to get to see what an A&M team this season looks like. And with all of those transfers and all that fun stuff from last season, I'm picking Miami in this one in a close one, 28-27.
All right. Johnny, your thoughts?
I'll pick Miami 35-28.
Okay. All right. Next is Kent State 0-1 at Arkansas 1-0, 4 o'clock on SEC Network. Matt has Arkansas 38-14. Yeah, I got Arkansas 48-10. Jesse, what's your pick?
I think you're going to see some really good stuff from KJ Jefferson in this one. And unfortunately, Kent State is going to go home with a loss. So I'm going to pick the Razorbacks 35-10.
Johnny.
Yeah, I think, Wes, I'm more like towards your end of it, that this is not going to be nearly as close even as Matt picked. So I'll go 42-7. Arkansas.
Did y'all see – who did Kent State play last weekend? Was it like – is it Central Florida?
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, they beat Kent State pretty handily, and their social media admin is just off the chain because they put someone call the National Guard, because I don't know. Are you familiar with that? The incident with the National Guard at Kent State?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you would have to go back this history. That's historical references, right?
Let's say, so yeah. Apparently, instances of was it students, right, getting shot by the National Guard up there. And I'm like, well, not only is this going way back into history, but like that's bold. This is a football
it
game.
Is.
That's
it
football, is. But also you're at an institution of higher education, and whatever intern texted, tweeted, whatever. Oh no, they're fired. Like, they're fired.
Face palm. Like that's you'd expect that from like Barstool, right?
Oh, true that. Like, true that.
They're fired. Bad luck, y'all. Bad luck.
Anyway, yeah, I just saw that and I had to mention it. All right, next Austin Peay 0-1 at Tennessee 1-0, 5 o'clock on ESPN Plus. Matt has Tennessee winning. I assume that's Tennessee 45-14. I assume he's not picking Austin Peay upset 45-14. So, yeah, I let's see. Yeah, Tennessee a lot to a little, 56-7. Jesse,
I like that. I'm gonna keep on that train. Tennessee a lot to a little, 45-3.
All right, Johnny.
I'll go Tennessee 63-7.
All right, putting the 60 burger on. All right, next is one that I've been looking forward to for a couple weeks now, actually longer than that. Texas 1-0 at Alabama 1-0, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Matt is picking Texas 28-24. Yeah, so like I said, really been looking forward to this one. There have been like a few surprisingly good matchups this week, but this one has been for me kind of, and for these teams as well, been circled on the schedule for a while. I've been looking forward to it. Texas played Bama tough last year, but lost on a field goal. It's a tall order to do the same in Tuscaloosa though, to me. So
true that.
I'd say that. It's still a close game, but slightly less drama, I think, but maybe only by the smallest of margins. I'm going to go Bama 31-24. Jesse, what do you think?
I'm already want to throw up. But thankfully we're not an 11 o'clock kickoff in Texas where it's like over 100 degrees on the field, which is just egregious.
Yeah.
It's a night game in Tuscaloosa. You're going to have 101,000 Bama fans. Cause I'm not allowing any Texas fans in the stadium cheering for the Tide. I think it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great game. but it's going to be a close one. I think it, luckily we've seen some composure from Milrow that we didn't see in the game last year, which he had to come in on. So, and there's a game plan for him. It's not one that we're trying to force him into. Right. So I'm going to pick the Tide, but it's going to be a close one. I'm picking the Tide 28-27, which I hate that I'm picking it that close, because I hope it's not.
Can't get any closer.
It can't get any closer. And everyone, I think, is excited for this one, because if you try to go stay in Tuscaloosa this weekend, if there's any place left, the last time I looked, everything was about 1,200 a night. So good luck. Nice.
You might as well stay in Birmingham.
It was even in Birmingham. Literally, it really went as far as Birmingham. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And real quick, Jesse, enlighten us about the situation with the band, Texas's band.
Oh, my God. Okay. So let me spill the tea for y'all. So if you remember last year, I was really mad about it. Alabama did not bring our band, which, again, I think was something that also contributed to just the stress, but we did not bring the $1 million band because Texas was not going to allow the $1 million band to sit on the lower level, right? They were going to make them sit on the upper level, which, like, try bringing a tuba up there in a band uniform in Austin in September at 11 o'clock kickoff. That's just unsafe. So to return the favor, now that it's in Tuscaloosa, we did not sell them any of the lower bowl tickets, and their band gets to sit in only the upper bowl if they decide to bring them.
Sweet.
See, this is SEC at its finest. As it's like it should petty, be. It's petty so at its finest.
It's so as fun. It should.
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny, what is your prediction for this game?
So I would never pick the SEC usurpers, Texas, who are coming in next year. So yeah. I will pick Alabama 28-24.
Okay.
By the way, the other UT is what they are.
The other UT.
Just to be clear.
Right. And that just awful shade of orange, right?
Horns down.
All right. Next is Middle Tennessee 0-1 at Mizzou 1-0, 7 o'clock on ESPN+. Matt has Mizzou 28-10 in this one. Mizzou, I don't have anything else to say, really. Mizzou 38-14. Jesse.
I echo this. I have not much to say. Mizzou 28-10.
Johnny?
I'll go Mizzou 28-7.
Okay. All right. Next is Grambling 0-1 at LSU 0-1. 7:30 on ESPN Plus. Matt has LSU 48-20. Tough opening week for LSU, but they get back on track here easily. I got LSU 56-7. Jesse?
Yeah, Grambling, I feel bad for them. LSU is pissed off, and they got to go into Death Valley at night. That's not fair. I'm picking LSU in this one, 35-9.
Yeah. Johnny?
LSU 42-7.
Okay. Next, McNeese 0-1 at Florida, also 0-1. 7:30 on ESPNU. Matt has Florida winning this one 30-10. For me, this is just another team with a tough opener that will enjoy getting back in the win column. I got Florida 42-10. Jesse?
I agree. I think this week they are just drilled in practice with fundamentals and making sure that they are cleaning up their act and not actually working against themselves. Plus, again, the Swamp is not an easy place to play either, and this is a night game. So poor McNeese. I'm picking the Gators 35-10.
All right, Johnny?
And the Gators 42-7.
All righty. Next is Arizona 1-0 at Mississippi State, also 1-0, 7:30 on SEC Network. Matt says, an interesting matchup here. He's got Mississippi State 27-17. I could kind of see Mississippi State kind of stumbling out of the gate in this one, but then kind of pulls it together. I'll say they win 34-24. Jesse.
Yeah, I agree. This is an interesting matchup, and one that I would say a little stumbly, like you said, in the upfront once we're in the first half. But the Bulldogs, I do think, pull away with it in the second half. So I'm going to go with Mississippi State 28-21.
Okay. Johnny.
And I will go Mississippi State 28-24.
Okay. All righty. Next is Furman at 1-0 at South Carolina 0-1. 7:30 on ESPN Plus. Matt has South Carolina 35-10. I hope South Carolina uses this game to kind of sort out some of those O-line issues. I'm going with South Carolina 52-13. Jesse?
Yeah, I hope they do as well. And again, you've got a night game there in Columbia, but my issue is, and the reason I'm picking it closer than I think I normally would, is just the injuries that were sustained in the UNC game. I think that will affect them just a little bit this week. So I am going to pick the Gamecocks, but I'm picking them 28-10.
All right, Johnny.
And I'll pick the Gamecocks. This is sort of a bit of a rivalry, not really because South Carolina is probably going to win it, but you still got a lot of people
mm-hmm.
region. So I'll pick South Carolina. I'll pick the same score as Matt, 35-10.
Okay. And regardless, probably lots of sandstorm played. So, and then the final game of the weekend is Auburn at 1-0 at California. Cal 1-0. That is going to be 10:30 on ESPN. If anybody wants to stay up for that one, it's going to be kind of brutal. Matt has Auburn 42-28. It's like when the Braves go out to the West Coast, right? It's like, oh, are you serious?
10:10 start time.
Right. Matt's got Auburn 42-28. I'd say Cal beat North Texas 58-21 in their opener. Honestly, I don't know how that helps in making a pick, but Auburn looked good. I think they have way more potential on offense with Hugh Freeze there. Tough part about this one is going to be being on the road and playing at 10:30 East Coast time. I think it's close, but I'll say Auburn wins this one 31-24. Jesse?
Yeah, traveling is going to be the thing here. Luckily for Auburn, it's only 2 hours different. So, you know, it'll feel late, but maybe that's not true. As late as
Auburn Central.
Central time.
That's yeah. true. It's only 2 hours.
But I still think it's going to be interesting. It's the first time Hugh Freeze has taken the guys on the road. And Cal has been dealing with a lot with all of this conference realignment. So I think they're a little stressed, but I am going to pick the Tigers in this one, 31-21.
Okay. Johnny, what you got?
I'll pick Auburn in this one. I'll go 28-17.
Okay. And real quick, I know we've kind of shared our feelings on conference realignment, but Johnny, I just want to kind of turn it to you real quick. Obviously, there's been a ton of shifting going on. What are your thoughts on conference realignment and the future of college football?
First, the ACC is going to have to change their name. They have Stanford and Cal moving into the Atlantic Coast Conference. Yeah, so whatever. this has been coming. For me, if it helps to make it more competitive, if it helps to create a better product, I think it does. I'm sort of in favor. I know there's a lot of other conversation to be had relative to finances and the student athletes, the non-revenue sports. My son was a college baseball player. It is really difficult for them because baseball, softball, and a lot of those sports, basketball, they play throughout the week. So if you've got to go from Auburn or if you've got to go across the country to play and then back, and you got class, it's very difficult. So. Mm-hmm. There's that piece of it. This is more than just football involved,
right.
But where football is concerned, I think it would create a better product.
Right. Yeah. And one thing that I hadn't even considered, but obviously it's going to be brought to the forefront is, as you mentioned, a lot more travel. And with that comes a lot more cost. And who absorbs all that? I would assume tuition, but I don't really know. So that's going to be another thing to watch out of all this. So
interesting.
Real quick, before we go into our outro, we really appreciate you coming on the show, Johnny. Is there anything that you would like people to know, any social medias you'd like to plug, anything like that?
Listen, thank you for letting me out. Listen, I'll sit down and chat football with you for an hour or so anytime. And thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Wes. I appreciate that. Thank you, Matt, for being gone that I could be on here. So let him know that. I'm the pastor of a church called Chat Valley Church, which is in the Chattahoochee Valley of Alabama. And if someone wants to come on Instagram and Facebook and follow that, it's at chat with two T's at Chat Valley Church. And would love to get some follows there. Would love that.
Good deal. Well, we appreciate your perspective. And, you know, even if it is another Tennessee fan, I'm just kidding.
Right. Right.
But we appreciate it. But yeah, we appreciate everyone listening. If you'd like to hit us up on TikTok, we are at Pigskins and Pageantry. Actually, we are that same handle on Instagram and Facebook also. And we are also on X, which still sounds weird to say, not Twitter, at PPSEC Podcasts. We are available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, most podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review. We'd appreciate 5 stars. And we would greatly appreciate that. Until next time, we're looking forward to some good games this weekend, some interesting matchups. This is Wes. Go Dawgs.
All right. Horns down, y'all. Roll Tide.
Go Vols.